Blog Talk Radio.
This is the number. Unfortunately, I had to basically shut my show down and then start it back over again. And literally, I'm probably going to just draw up a lawsuit of some sort. Because I just don't even know what to do. Hey, Betsy, what's going on? Thanks for y'all being patient. Like I said, I've been using this particular company for years. I've paid them a lot of money. They don't want to develop an app because they're ignorant, and they don't want to finish their merger with Spreaker because they're ignorant. And again, I'm trying to get all my money back. That's what I'm going to try to do. We're talking thousands of dollars over a decade, and I have thousands of shows. Well, maybe not thousands of shows, but maybe that many. So we're back on, though. And as soon as we get my co-host back on and we get John back on, we're going to finish John's conversation about their being on the coast and looking at all the different cars. And then we're going to talk some sports. We're going to do Jordan's Jewels. And then we're going to break into some Braves talk. And in the second hour, we're going to get into some Falcons, some Hawks, some Atlanta United, and some more Hawks. So we're just going to wait for John to get back on. I got my co-host Jordan back on the line. Jordan, how you doing, sir?
Oh, man. Like I said, rough few days, sir. Rough few days.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully those things will alleviate themselves for you personally, man. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. This is Atlanta sports, though. More than anything. But as we wait on John to come back on, like I said, I'm very excited about the Hawks. And, you know, I don't want to jump the gun and go into full, you know, predictions or anything yet, you know, unless you're ready to do something like that, Chris. But I have very high hopes for the Atlanta Hawks this year. Definitely think that, you know, we'll be in competition for a playoff spot. Definitely don't think we'll be discussing the Hawks as any kind of potential of having a shot at the top draft picks or anything like that this year. You know, people talk about tanking and whatnot, and, you know, you always say players don't tank. We know that only tanking is done by organization, by basically tearing down a roster and putting a roster on the floor that's not good enough to win. The Hawks just have so much young talent from top to bottom, from Trae Young to Kevin Herter to John Collins, to Cam Reddish, to DeAndre Hunter, just so much talent, Jabari Parker, that the Hawks couldn't tank if they wanted to, because with the amount of young talent and players that they have, you're talking about they're going to beat some teams just off the talent. And the more experience they gather throughout the season, the better and better they're going to be, because that's the only thing that this team lacks is a lot of experience. Obviously, we have quite a bit in Vince, and Chandler Parsons and Evan Turner have quite a bit of experience as well. But everybody else outside of that is pretty young for the most part.
They're young with skills, though. They're young with skills. And sometimes the talent is going to overwhelm the experience a little bit because, you know, it's just going to be different, y'all. That's that 646-652-4479. It's just going to be different. We've never seen what we're about to see this season before. Okay, so we need to cherish these times. You make sure you're recording it. Looks like we got John back on the line. Let's go ahead and get him back in and make sure we get him let him finish his thoughts. John, thanks for being patient, sir.
Hey, man. Gremlins come anywhere, man. I understand, you know, from time to time, you know, I run into them or whatever, but man, I got scared when they said I couldn't call back for 21 hours.
Nah, that's what Jordan said. I had to stop the show. I had to end the show, and that's what it automatically would say. So I had to risk shutting it down to reboot it, basically. I had to do it all the way. I didn't like doing that, but I had no choice in this case. I didn't want to cancel the show tonight, so I did what I had to do.
Oh, no.
It looks like it's working, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, kind of finishing up, the cry has been to find a max player. And we have, from what I'm understanding, we've got around about $75 million in the kitty. But
In
my opinion, I think we need to just grow one.
We
need to grow one out of the people that we have here now. And don't go, you know, and we need to stop this begging people to come here. Come on, Chris, all these players, and a lot of them I really, you know, don't really know that much about, but I remember they were trying to get what's his name from Golden State to come before he tore
Klay Thompson.
Achilles.
Klay Thompson.
Also Durant, you know, they were talking about we can make a package for Durant and we can make a package for this person, a package for that person. Look, these people, and I said this last year, anytime you take a team to three overtimes and score 166 points, you on the right track with what you got. You on the right track with what you got. Now, I want the Hawks to be deadly at all five positions, inside and out, because, you know, right now you don't have a true you don't need a true five in the NBA anymore. Now, someone could create one and really, you know, do some damage with it, but right now you don't have a true five. You got people that can shoot inside and out now versus just being able to post up or just being able to dunk. You know, and look at the Olympics. Well, the Olympic tryouts that just took place. See, the world has caught up with the college athlete. Matter of fact, caught up and eclipsed the college athlete in the Olympics.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You know, so see, the thing is that the college athlete needs to be working on their skills, and, you know, the pro athletes that they insert in there, you know, they're going to take care of the business. Because I remember seeing that where we just really got embarrassed. It was about 10 years ago when they were daring the United States college kids to shoot. When they stopped at the three-point line, they just bagged off of them. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And they knew they couldn't hit it. But everybody else around the world, they are honing their shooting skill. And that's something that we need to do. And here we have a perfect opportunity to have a team on the East Coast that can rival what's going on out there at the West Coast. Because if you've ever watched East Coast basketball versus West Coast basketball, man, you know, there's a marked difference in the philosophy and in the execution. And the Eastern Conference is just ugly. The Western Conference, man, I mean, oh, man, the fluidity of movement, the accuracy of shooting, you know, the only way you can do anything, the Eastern Conference can do anything is just beat people up and have them too tired to shoot or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, and it's been like that for decades, really. It's a formula of a style, but it's also kind of how things were geared, because if you had a team like the Bad Boys, you had to kind of build your team similarly just to compete because you didn't want to get beat up. So the whole Eastern Conference kind of kept that for a while, and the same thing in the West. It was always run and gun. you know, Phoenix Suns, Utah, whoever it was, Seattle, of course, you know, all over the place. And it's just kind of kept like that. But like you said, it'd be great to see that adjustment. It'd be great to see that it's the Hawks doing it, because we have the tools to do it. We've seen it. Like you mentioned that triple overtime game. I posted that on the New Pack City page. That was one of the That was one of the most exciting games I've seen in years. And I hate that we still lost that game, of course. But that was one of those moments to where, yeah, we're going to do some things. Whenever we figure out the defense, we're going to kill teams, because nobody could really stop us. Score wasn't an issue. We just couldn't stop nobody. So I appreciate that point for sure, John.
Now, I'm going to ask your indulgence here. I know this is a Hawks segment, but did you catch any of my film study last night?
Not last night. I missed it last night.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something that's up there for everybody to see. But I wanted to talk about them for a minute, if I might, please, sir.
Go ahead.
Now, last Sunday, and whether you saw my film study or not, I know you saw all of the flack that I was catching on in the Bird Gang group about my take about what happened. You did see that.
Yeah, I saw it.
Now, one thing that I tell people, and I'm thinking that you are beginning to learn. Hey, where's your partner? Hey, man, where you at? Is your partner on?
No, I'm still here, sir.
Yeah,
I'm still here, sir.
I didn't hear you. Okay. I thought you dropped again. But one thing that I am always looking at, I'm looking at the effect of ball control or possession of the ball has on the defense. Now, contrary to popular belief, the Texans did not hold the ball for 40 minutes. There was only a 2-minute difference in time of possession. The Falcons had it for 29 minutes. The Texans had it for 31. But that third quarter where we punted three times, that was what I emphasized on my show last night. I emphasized on my film study last night and the effect that it had, because the thing is that, okay, if you're going into the second half 17-16, all right, they get the ball back first, they score. You get the ball back, you use only a minute and 50-something seconds of game time. You're punting it back. Your defense, who just left the field, is right back out there. No point, no time off the clock, no rest. Offense goes out there, spends 2 minutes out there, punts. Defense right back out there. Two touchdowns were scored. Then the last possession, three and out, minute 40-something seconds. Defense right back out there. Okay? Now, coincidentally, that's the same thing that happened on that same field in the Super Bowl.
Mm.
You didn't give your defense an opportunity to even strategize, because before you know it, you're going right back out there on the field because your offense has used no time and has given you no more points to defend. Then what the special teams does, well, Houston muffed a punt right before the end of the quarter. So that score that you scored, Falcons, was in the fourth quarter. The two touchdowns that you scored were in the fourth quarter. But you just wasted three possessions in the third, putting your defense out there on the field with no possession. Now, there are some of us that want Matt Ryan to go into the hurry-up offense because he's supposed to be able to do this and run the team. I'm scared to do it. I'm really scared to do it because, see, if you're not using any time, because, see, the thing is, if you drive down, get a field goal, five, six, seven-play drive using 7-8 minutes, you reduce the time that that other team has to score. But if you don't, because you only spent, and this is the crazy part, with those three drives, you only spent 5 minutes of game time, gained only 57 yards. But
yeah.
The Texans had 10 minutes of the quarter. So your offense got good rest over there on the sideline because the defense was out there for 10 of the 15 minutes of the quarter. Okay? Now, how is your defense, since all of the rules are against them, since the offense knows where they're going and you don't, how you continue to put the defense in a bad place? Now, they're not playing well. Okay, the defense already isn't playing well. But you're in a shootout now. The way that we marched down for those two touchdowns, they got to stop in the fourth quarter in order for them to get that second touchdown. No, they didn't. They scored again. But my problem is that you cannot come away with no points on possession. With the way that this offense and this team, these people look on paper, with the money that you spent on that side of the ball, with all of the, on paper now, we're supposed to be one of the most explosive offenses in the league.
Yeah.
But where is it?
I hear you, John, but at the same time, even the most explosive teams have averaged in the 30s. Like, no team is going to score on every drive. And so, you know, to put that game on the offense, certainly the offense was discombobulated at times in that drive. But what about in the first half where the offense goes on a touchdown drive, on their second drive, defense comes right back and gives up a touchdown. Offense turns around and goes on a 10-play drive on their third drive and get a field goal. Defense comes right back down and allows a touchdown. And that's in the first half when they're not even supposed to be tired. And I'm always hearing this excuse for the defenses about them being tired, but these are world-class athletes. And while that happens to a degree, they're also defensive linemen being cycled in and out of the game. So really the only guys on the field, almost all of those snaps, is guys like Deion Jones and guys like cornerbacks and things of that nature. This defense is abysmal. Okay, this blustered coverages have become a regular occurrence against this defense. You see two guys going to one guy with another guy running wide open across the formation. Deshaun Watson threw 5 touchdowns and 5 incompletions. Anytime you got a quarterback with his incompletions matching his touchdown, that's the problem. Vic Beasley, how do you play the entire game and you don't have not one step? You don't have no pass deflected. You don't have a tackle.
You don't have the power of the dark side.
Somebody else on the tackle. You don't have a pass. You don't have anything. Okay? And that's not the first time he's done this. I can recall Chris and I on this show talking about a game last year where he put up zeros across the board in the stat sheet. This is a first-round draft pick that makes $12.8 million. Okay? Trufant is a first-round draft pick that makes $14 million. They're having to use the safety, Rico, to help out on Oliver, who's the second-round draft pick. They can't cover anyone. And now Trufant is getting toasted. Tack McKinley does all his talking, and he's got a half a sack on the season. There are only 2 players on this defense that rank in the top 10 of their position, according to Pro Football Focus, in their grades. And I know their grades are subjective, but I tell you what, they're spot on about a lot of this stuff. Only 2 players. Grady Jarrett is the 4th-ranked defensive tackle in the entire NFL, and Deion Jones is the 7th-ranked linebacker, not counting the rush guys on the outside, like pure linebacker in the NFL. Austin Hooper is the 8th-ranked tight end. Those are the only 3 players on the Falcons that are top 10 at their position. Furthermore, it's not just the defense, though, because the offense has had some major problems. I told everyone on this show before the season that Jamon Brown and Chris Carpenter could not play football. I looked at the grades, I looked at the history, I looked at the football teams they've been on, and it's proven to be true. They are both horrid, both of them. as well as Hasumbrello, who we decided to re-sign and give him more money, like that was going to make him good all of a sudden. So ultimately, this is on Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, in my opinion. Bad personnel moves, bad decision making. Let me give you one more before I let you, you guys talk. You take the NFL interception leader, DeMonte Casey, who tied for the lead with, I think, Fuller of the Bears. I know somebody on the Bears that had 7 interceptions just like he did. You take him and move him out of the middle of the field. You put him at slot cornerback. Now he's ranked like number 111 out of cornerbacks when he was a top 10 safety. It makes no sense to me at all, sir, whatsoever.
Real quick, 646-652-4479. Let me get into the second half of the show. And we do have another caller. So at 770-714, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick little break as we go into the 11 o'clock hour as we actually talking Falcons already. This is Around the ATL on IMTM Worldwide Radio. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere, y'all. Chris on IMTN Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL, second hour of the show. We started the show talking some Atlanta Hawks basketball. Shout out to Linda calling in from State Farm Arena as she attended the game, talked about the atmosphere, and talked about how excited she is about the season. And shout out to all those who are watching on New Pack City's Facebook page. John has called in, and he started talking, of course, the Hawks, but then he also segued into some Falcons. He's doing that right now. And so, of course, we are in Falcons segment. So, of course, I got to go ahead and do it since we're here. Got to make sure that we start the Falcons segment correct as we do each and every week. Let's do that real quick.
Welcome to Atlanta, home of them dirty birds. Anybody hating, get kicked to the curb. Any other team is absurd.
Okay, so just out of respect, we're not going to play the whole one. Let's go ahead and bring our co-host back in. And Mr. John, go ahead and finish your thought. But actually, John, if you don't mind, I'm going to keep you on hold a little bit. I want to bring in this other caller because he has been holding a little bit through the segment. Good evening, caller. Go ahead and tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, what's going on, Chris? It's George, man.
Hey, George, how you doing, man? Long time no talk.
What's going on, George?
What's going on, man? What's going on, man? I guess I missed the first segment, man. I was trying to get a little bit of Hawks in there, but I understand you got a show to maintain.
No worries. Yeah. You want to talk some Hawks? Talk some Hawks, man. This is the fan show. That's what I've been telling
your
people
show
for
right now, sir.
A year. If you want to talk about a particular subject, feel free to do so. We have our segments. I can always rearrange. So go ahead and talk some Hawks.
Yeah. I wasn't at the game tonight, but I was at the game Monday night, man. And like the other caller was talking about, I'm really excited about this year, man, because I think we got a lot of potential here, man. I said we are looking. I think we're going to be a lot better than other teams. And I think I heard Sam Mitchell say the other day, you look at the Hawks probably being a 6 seed. You know, I had said around 6 or 7 myself, not even hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
But just the fact that, you know, you got, you know, all these veterans around this young core, and with the guys that we drafted, man, I'm like, when we got Cam Reddish, that was like a godsend. I wanted Hunter anyway. Then you get Reddish, and now you got these other glue guys, you know, these solid vets, you know, like, you know, Jabari Parker, the you know, Chandler Parsons, you know, the Evan Turners, you know, guys that really kind of want to kind of redefine themselves, you know, because they've been pretty much injury prone, all of them anyway. But
yeah.
I think the sleeper that everybody's not going to be talking about, which I think is going to be the kid out of Maryland. I think it was Fernando Bruno. I think that's the one that's going to surprise everybody, man, because that kid, not only is he's aggressive, man, he's athletic as well to be a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a chip on his shoulder as well, you know, for all those teams passing on him. But he and Kevin Herter actually played together at Maryland. So now you got that familiarity. Vince is going to be that glue guy to keep these guys together. And I think the biggest turning point last year when Trey came into his own was once a vet like that told him, hey, man, this is your team. That's what was missing the first part of the year. And that confidence, you can see the confidence in this kid now.
Yeah.
So between him,
great points, man.
Collins, and I'm telling you, Herter, he got his confidence. I'm telling you, man, I'm excited by those guys, man. So now, since we had that blasting of the Braves, so now we got to hang our hats on the Bulldogs and the Hawks this year to bring some excitement back to the city, man. So, but yeah, man, that was my thing, man. I'm too upset. I'm not even upset about the Falcons, to be honest with you, man, because it's just, I'm more focused on the Hawks now, man.
Gotcha.
That's just me, man.
Well, George, right. We appreciate you calling in, man. All season, man, make sure you call in, especially on the game night. We love to have fans calling Linda from a game, man. So definitely do that
throughout
the season.
I'm a ticket holder, brother. Yeah, this is my 11th season, bro. I'm a season ticket holder.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Appreciate that, George.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it, George.
Yes, sir.
That was George representing Atlanta right there. Let's go ahead and bring Mr. John back into the show. All right, so John, we're doing the film study. We're talking offense versus defense. Jordan was kind of finishing a point. I do want to kind of chip in there as well. As far as offense versus defense, as Jordan kind of rattled off everything. Some of the stuff that I was going to mention, especially with Vic Beasley and Tack on the end, is really not affecting the game at all right now. I don't even know what to say about those guys. As far as Trufant goes, he's getting toasted. He's getting torched right now. Oliver, I wanted to give him all the benefit of the doubt. He's beyond lost out there at this point. It does matter if the offense is not able to sustain a possession to where you're going back out there with the defense. However, I still feel that there has to be accountability on both sides, of course, but more so to the defense because, again, Dan Quinn is the defensive coordinator. So for me at this point, of all the times where he's been talking the talk but not walking the walk, this one is a monumental one because, again, at a certain point, if you have a quarterback who's able to scan everything all the time and you're not even trying to blitz, that's a problem. Because what else worse can happen now if you blitz? You know what I'm saying? Blitz everybody. I saw a team the other Sunday, and they blitzed like 10 people. And I was like, hey, he had to throw the ball away because somebody didn't get blocked. I was like, how come the Falcons don't do that at least one time? Just to try it, just to see if it'll work. Now, if it doesn't work, you know what? You try it again and again and again because everything else that they're trying, it hasn't worked at all. You see what I'm saying? And at the end of the result, the Falcons did put up 34 points. That should have been a winnable game one way or the other, but we can't stop nobody. We hadn't stopped anybody all season. That's worse. If Dan Quinn wasn't defensive coordinator, it'd be one thing. But like I said last year, the moment he put that mantle on, he was accountable. He was putting himself out there. He put all of his money on Vic Beasley, and he has lost. He's lost big time on that one. You see what I'm saying? Duke Riley, he ain't even here no more. You see what I'm saying? I say Dirk Cutter is also accountable for this because he's not been calling great games. I don't know what happened. I'm thinking he's going to come in here. I was so confident initially there were some people that we wanted, but we weren't going to get them. We got Dirk. Okay, cool. But at a certain point, it's just like, well, what are we really doing out here? And I just feel that at a certain point, just let Matt be the offensive coordinator. Just let him call all the plays because it's his offense anyway at this point. But that's not going to happen. We don't have a running game. The offensive line we were supposed to have is non-existent, you know. And it's just
– mean no running game.
We're 1-4. And even with all those things, we're not 0-5. And we haven't played our division yet. So there's still an opening here. But we can't lose another game. And for me, I felt that this would be the opportune time for Arthur Blank to make a flight to Arizona and go ahead and do what he needs to do, because I don't think we need to languish in what we are right now. I'd rather have somebody else take a L rather than what we probably will get with an L with Dan Quinn being still here. I just think we need fresh everything. Dan Quinn has not coordinated in a long time. He's not changing. When that quarterback from the Houston Texans told everybody what our defense was in stark detail, and all I could think was, are we going to change any of that before the Arizona game, or are we going to keep it exactly the same? That's what scares me. And I don't know the answer to that, and that scares me even more. 646-652-4479, what do you fellas think as we look and see if we got some other Falcons callers on the Atlanta Bird Gang site checking in? What's up, guys? Go ahead.
Now,
John.
Yes, I'm still here. This is a thing for me, because see, I did deal with the defense, and I saw something that just, you know, why are we having one of the front four fall back into coverage? And I saw this three freaking times during that third quarter.
We dropped eight on those three plays. We only rushed three men on those three plays.
That's what I'm saying. I said
against, I thought that was
team.
A joke. I saw that in a
against
message,
team,
and I thought it was a joke,
no,
but apparently it
no,
wasn't.
Real quick, against the team that had allowed an NFL high 18 sacks coming into the ball game, mind you, keep in mind.
But see now I'm gonna stop right here. And I'm going to ask you guys something, because, see, now, this is confusing me. Okay, when a defensive coordinator is working, I'm trying to figure out how a defensive coordinator is working, standing on the sidelines, looking at the field. Every time the camera shines over there on the sidelines, I'm looking at my defensive coordinator slash head coach with the headset on, looking out on the field when the offense is on the field, okay? Now, that's the time that a defensive coordinator is supposed to be going to each position group, chewing behind out, pumping people up, am I right or wrong? Because, see, I'm
no,
saying
you're right.
that
obviously, he has to have his position coaches that are going over the pictures on the iPad or whatever while he's watching the offense. But to be honest with you, I remember even Mike Smith, who was the head coach and was not calling the defense, I remember him a lot more often going over to the defense while the offense was on the field after they had given up a big play.
Trying to figure out what's going on.
He would be going off on people. He'd be pointing at people and yelling and everything. I've seen that a whole lot more of that out of Mike Smith than I ever have out of Dan Quinn.
Well, see, this is the thing. But see, and I guess to both of the point, Mike Smith had a defensive coordinator.
Right.
You know,
he still did.
That's the thing. Mike Smith had a defensive coordinator. He had an offensive coordinator. Mike Smith wasn't nothing but a game, quote unquote, game manager. His only job was to keep the red flag from hitting the ground by mistake. That was his only job. But he had a defensive coordinator. Okay, now my problem with this defensive coordinator that I have here now, he's not working on Sunday, okay? He's not working on Sunday. He's head coaching on Sunday, okay? Now
he's barely doing that.
So, see, my problem is that the position coaches are running the defense. He's not, because whoever came up with that mess about rushing three men and not blitzing anybody, that's just ridiculous.
I almost had my tiki torch on that one, man. I ain't gonna lie.
You know, because see now, Chauncey, I don't know whether you saw that, Chris, or not, but when Chauncey went off Monday, Brian Cox. Now y'all remember him, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Brian Cox would have strangled somebody over there.
Yeah.
You know, he would have strangled somebody over there. Man, they'd have had to call the police just to break up the fight on the sideline if someone had missed an assignment, not gotten back there. And that's the type of person that you need on defense. Because, see, the thing is, when you draft folks, just like you were saying, when you draft people, you're supposed to be drafting borderline psychopaths, all right? People that just are just inside of crazy in order to play defensive line, cornerback, linebacker, somebody you have to feed hot sauce and gunpowder to and keep them chained up in the backyard until Sunday. Those are the type of people that you need on defense, okay? But these folks, they soft as tissue paper, and we are still too small on the line of scrimmage on both sides, really. We're still too small. Now, and those of you who have been listening to me, now, I've always been an advocate of going either, well, you're right here in the hotbed of the SEC. Anything you need is right here. Belichick down here, grabs everything that comes out of Georgia. Got some people's phone numbers last time he was down here last year. Grabbed an offensive lineman and grabbed Sony Michel and gave them both Super Bowl rings this past year. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the New York Giants try to grab every running back that Georgia puts out. They had Alabama, they had Southern Miss, they had Mississippi State, they had Texas, they had Arkansas. But us, we go way to the
Montana
State and Montana. You know, and see, my thing is, it's just like having a Walmart right around the corner, but you're going to drive 800 miles to go shop at Big Lots. It don't make no sense. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Man, you should have this team, the Falcons, should have a pipeline to Georgia. Okay, to Georgia Southern.
Alabama, Auburn.
Alabama, you know, you should have a pipeline talking to somebody because, see, now when they got McGarry and they got Lindstrom, I told them, you know, and I was just cussing that whole doggone draft. I was cussing the whole draft. I would take a fourth stringer from Alabama rather than a first stringer from Boston College. They say the
I mean, I guess, good. But sometimes you do have good linemen. Like, good players come from everywhere. Now, I don't understand some of this Montana stuff, but at least, you know, that's a Power 5 conference guy. I really don't think McGarry and Lindstrom, well, I mean, obviously Lindstrom hurt. So I think he's going to be eventually a gamer, though. He played a lot of snaps on a broken foot before exiting that game. McGarry's out here, Poe McGarry, he's out here with a big robot knee brace on. Been hurt since the beginning, having to go up against J.J. Watt. But the problem is we wasted money on three other guys. Jamon Brown, James Carpenter, and Sombrello can't play. If they actually, like, brought in some guys to support these young guys with that money and they used Big Beasley's money to get somebody different, to me that's what I was more worried about that. Now, obviously I wasn't crazy about trading the draft pick to get back up to get McGarry. I think you should have waited to see if he was there in the second round and not went in a different direction because that's one thing that the Mitchell has consistently did. He doesn't ever trade down in the draft. He always trades up. And over time, that hits the depth of your team, giving up the extra draft pick.
Well, see,
John, before you start, I got another caller. So go ahead and finish your thought, but I do have another caller on the line, too.
Oh, okay. I don't want to take up too much of your time, gentlemen. But yes, my thing is, Arizona.
Oh boy,
Chris,
another mobile quarterback coming in too.
And see that's been our downfall.
Is it the shoes?
Mm-hmm.
But gentlemen, let me put it like this: you are who you practice against. Who are we practicing against on defense? And I'm going to leave on that. Gentlemen, have a good night.
You too, John.
Good night, John.
You too.
Appreciate the call, man. That was John also representing Atlanta, talking some deep Deep Falcons talk right there. We have another caller. Let's go ahead and bring him in as well. Good evening, caller. Go ahead and tell us where you're calling from and your name, please.
Jonathan from New Jersey. How are you?
Jonathan, New Jersey. What's up, man?
What's happening?
Well, I watch the Falcons from afar, born and raised in Atlanta. And at the end of the day, listen, the personnel is just not that good, certainly on the defensive line. They may give you the impression that it's good, but it's just not. It's not schemes. It's not this. It's not that. They're just not that good. Besides Grady, it's about the only person I think in this
Grady's
young linebacker.
Working.
I think the young linebacker they took out of the small school in was it North Carolina. I think he's going to be good. I think Deion's good. 59's okay, but outside of that, I just don't think the Falcons personnel is very good. And at the end of the day, and it's unfortunate that Dan's going to end up taking the hit on this, and he should. Because it's his defense. He took the job as defensive coordinator. And by the way, before everybody wanted to kill the offensive coordinator last year, the Falcons had a top offense last year. I don't know why everybody had such a problem with the O.
35 touchdowns,
last year.
7 interceptions,
So, well, I'm talking about the offensive coordinator last year. I thought he did a fine job.
Right.
Everybody's so in love with Dirk Cutter. He hasn't shown me anything yet. And the other thing is if you clean house with Dan Quinn, and I don't want to do it midseason, you don't gain any – there's nothing to be gained by doing that. But if Dan goes, it's time to make a change with Dimitroff. It's time to clean house. And it's time to start afresh with the Falcons. So, you know, that's
the shame. I don't think you'll be able to start fresh with players just due to some of the contracts that have just been signed, like Julio Jones.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Matt Ryan,
that's the problem.
Grady Jarrett,
looks like
Deion Jones.
Looks like
those guys will be here.
Yeah.
But I
looks
do
like
agree
we took
that
the, it looks like we chose the – It looks like we chose the wrong running back after Monday night, the way Tevin Coleman was running the ball. But listen, you can't look back; you got to go forward. And just to switch subjects, because you can't get the ATL out of me. A disappointing night tonight in baseball. What are you going to do?
We had our shot.
We had our shot the other night.
Should have put him away.
And when you do that, and let's not forget something. In a game five, in an elimination game, it's the home team that's under pressure, not the road team. That's what came back to bit them. And, you know, they've softened the blow tonight with the retirement of Brian McCann, which I got no problem with. He looks so bad at the plate over there.
I agree.
But whatever it is, you know, keep hope. You know, somebody's
There's
made
always
a joke
next
to me up
year.
Here. Somebody, I have a talk show up here, and somebody – up in the New York area, and somebody called my show, and they like to rub it into me. I make it very clear who my team is, and they said, who would have thought that the Falcons and Braves regular season would end on the same day?
Oh, man.
I enjoy the show. All the best, and keep up the good work you're doing.
Thanks. Thank you so much out there.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate the call. Real quick, Chris, I just want to say here, and you mentioned it briefly a second ago, but this is a major problem when you have NFL players calling out the Atlanta Falcons defense. This is Ron Parker, Kansas City Chiefs safety, who's also did a short stint with the Falcons. He tweeted out the scheme. The whole league knows how to attack the Atlanta Falcons defense. Hashtag soft zone. Also, Kiki Coti, Texans wide receiver, said, the Falcons D, he mentioned that the Falcons D was basic. He had a feeling that the Texans would go off in the game prior to the game. When you got not only other players around the league, you got the analysts on TV that realize we have a simple scheme. That's where the problem comes in. So even if the personnel isn't the best, which I admit it, I mean, we know the edge guys aren't any good at all. And Vic Beasley, Tack McKinley is not as bad as Vic, but he gets more pressure, but
he's not far away.
Right, he don't finish anything, even though he's more disruptive. He doesn't zero out for whole games. Then we got problem on the corners as well. So when you got your edge guys and your corner guys not playing well, that is a problem. But at the same time, a good defensive coordinator will scheme you up something. But the problem is there is no innovation on this team, schematically
None.
On offense or defense.
Or defense.
On either side
yeah.
of football. That's
yeah.
the problem.
And, and that's an inherent issue right there. And it's, again, it's a, you could say it could be trust. But at a certain point when stuff is not working and it's being proved not to work, the trust has to be thrown out the window and say, okay, you're going to keep trusting these guys to play this scheme that was successful somewhere else. And every now and again was successful for us, but not really because, again, the Dan Quinn era has only created one top 10 defense this whole time. And that was the year after the Super Bowl. Matt Ryan outplayed the defense the Super Bowl year. But other than that, Matt Ryan has been – he's had to overplay what we've had deficiencies as far as defense goes. And most of that is scheme. It's because people know what's coming. 3 weeks ago, the commentators were talking about everybody knows what Dan Quinn is going to do. And then we had to watch that Texans game. And then we had to watch Deshaun tell everybody what they're doing. And that was maddening. And again, I'm just so worried that Arizona might put up a 70 spot on us. Because what is Dan Quinn going to do about it? Like it's a dare now. It's like the whole league has been basically put on notice to say, hey, you got any guys who hadn't had a catch in a while? Hey guys, you see what I'm saying? It's like just throw it. And there was this real funny video of they did a mashup of Deshaun Watson. They put a voiceover on it, and basically they said we were just telling people to come out the crowd. You want to catch a ball? Come out the crowd. It was so funny, but it might have been true. I might be able to get a couple of catches out there, and I ain't played football in forever. So it's scary that we are at this point. However, like I said, we haven't played our division yet at all. We're 1-4,
Chris.
But a cool win streak gets us back.
Chris,
come on, 646-652-4479. Atlanta Bird game.
I'm
see y'all in there.
Positivity.
Come
and
on,
I,
now.
And I really do respect your positivity, but I'm more of a person that's I'm not a totally negative person, but I'm a realist. And there's just nothing in the pattern that shows me that this thing is going to turn around. And my problem with Dan Quinn is the arrogance there. There's a roster arrogance, and there's a scheme arrogance. Roster-wise, he just was determined that he could fix Vic Beasley as opposed to just go ahead and cutting bait on the guy. You could have got rid of him with zero cap hit and totally cleared $8 million, almost 13, before free agency. That money could have been used to get, for example, a guy from UGA who was cut by Kansas City, Justin Houston. Well, guess what Justin Houston was? AFC Defensive Player of the Week for the Colts last week. You know, things like that. Then you have an arrogance with scheme where this man is going to run this same cover three zone, cover two man, would occasionally call himself mixing in a cover two zone or cover two man on a zone blitz every now and then where it's only four or five guys rushing. And he's going to continue to do that because, you know, that's what he does. Rather than him saying, okay, look, this isn't working with the personnel I have. Let me install some extra blitz packages in, you know what I mean, and to at least something different. No, the man is stubborn. He's going to keep doing what he does. And to be honest with you, Chris, and I know this is, I hate to say this because this is going to sound bad, but I don't know if it'd be a good thing if we go on a winning streak and Dan Quinn get to keep his job unless we somehow go on enough of a winning streak to win a Super Bowl. Because the man just does not give us an advantage to win on game day. And the Falcons would be better off once we get rid of this guy, hire an offensive coach like a lot of these teams around the league have done. That way you have some continuity with your offense where most of your money is at. And all that offensive coach has to do is hire an aggressive defensive coordinator, okay? And then the other thing besides that, why you hire the offensive coach, you let that offensive coach know, look, we're not going to spend a bunch of money on offense nor a bunch of draft picks on offense. We've already got a lot of money on offense. So I'm expecting you to improve this offense, you know, once your linemen get
healthy. Earn your money. Now, do your job. Corey.
Right. We may have to add one more piece in there somewhere, but that's what I'm telling my offensive head coach. And then after that, you go and draft everything you can on defense. I'm talking about taking corners, taking coverage linebackers, taking a new strong safety, taking two new defensive ends between the draft and free agency, put all of your resources in the defense. That's how you fix this team, Chris.
We need
go right ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish up.
No, I was just going to say, honestly, if we would have won a few more games, you know, it would end up being fool's gold, Chris. The best thing is for this thing to go ahead and just take its course, for us to get a new guy in here that's going to be innovative, and it's going to actually give us some form of advantage on game day.
646-652-4479. I still feel they could fire Dan Quinn, even playoffs and everything, because they see the writing on the wall as far as that goes. Because, see, I think a win streak, if it happens, it's not going to be because of Dan Quinn. It's just going to be the players, for whatever reason, hopefully, actually do feel accountability and say, okay, I'm going to wrap up a little bit better now because I'm embarrassed. See, if anything, this game could be the catalyst to say, okay, enough is a freaking enough. Okay? Either Vic Beasley, you're going to do something, or you don't play. Now, see, unfortunately, we don't have the coach that's actually going to do that. But you know what? I think about that movie Moneyball, and I think Thomas Dimitroff needs to do a Moneyball and be like, you know what? You can't play him no more because he ain't on the team anymore. You see what I'm saying? It's like, why are we, again, it's just a matter of, that's what I wish actually happened with the Braves and Julio Teheran, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, I believe that we could still get rid of him even if we went all the way to the Super Bowl. I don't think a Super Bowl keeps his job, truthfully. I don't think it does. You see what I'm saying? Because he's not, again, he's not a game manager, and he's not a defensive coordinator. All the reasons we both have said over a period of time now, but you've just reiterated them. He's out there pretending. He's not. John mentioned it as well. What is he coordinating if he's not in the line? He's not on the defensive line coaches in the front of the defensive line men that he has, that he's drafted, that he's part of, right? The quarterbacks. Like, at a certain point, these guys that are out there ain't doing the job. Give somebody else a chance to get burned. Anybody but them. I'd be happy with that right now.
Yeah,
that's
he
what
did
I'm
bench
looking
Oliver.
At.
He did bench Oliver in that game. Unfortunately, KZ sustained a concussion, so Oliver had to come back in. He replaced Oliver with Sheffield in that game. He's talking about the personnel change this week, but should have been happening before this week.
Real it quick, should have been happening before this.
Here's the quarterback, Deshaun Watson. Completed 28 of 33 passes for 400 and – screen just went blank for a second there. But – oh, goodness – okay, I'm sorry. Here we go. 28 of 33 pass attempts for 426 yards and 5 touchdowns and no interception for a perfect 158.3 passer rating in the Texas win over Atlanta. He became the first player to pass for at least 400 yards and 5 touchdowns with 5 or few incompletions in a single game in NFL history, sir. I mean,
no,
when you got two.
Blitzen is bad.
But you got the guy sitting back for all day and making history on your defense. And meanwhile, you took over the defense and something was supposed to be better, and we're 24th in yards allowed and 31st in points allowed. Only the Miami Dolphins allow more points per game than the Atlanta Falcons, sir.
What's that? Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Me too, Coach. I don't know why we're talking about playoffs, Coach. I just hope we can win a game, Coach.
I believe that we can still pull this off just because I'm just crazy like that. But, again, I just feel that the humiliation of what happened, Deshaun out there telling everybody what they can and can't do, you see what I'm saying? And I just think that, you know –
you want to crown them, then crown their ass.
That's right. That's
but
right,
they
Dennis.
Are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
That's right, Dennis. We still could have beat Texas. I don't know. I just feel that.
Realize that's 1-11. 1-11 in the last 12 games against AFC opponents as well, sir. 1-11.
Well, fortunately, we won't be playing no AFC teams for a while. Hopefully not. And see, again, it's an indictment. Again, all of this is on Dan Quinn. And now, yes. Thomas Dimitroff deserves some of this as well. I don't think all of it, because, again, the five things that you need to make a team great over a period of time, you need to have a owner that cares about winning and wants to win and does what's necessary to try to put a team together, a.k.a. making sure you get management that actually knows what they're doing and makes wise decisions over a period of time and lets them do it. Like Dan Snyder doesn't let his people do what they're supposed to do, and that's why they haven't won in 20 years. Would you rather be like the Washington Redskins? But anyway, you also have to have a good to great coach. Now, we have not had a good to great coach. You also have to have good to great players, and you also have to be healthy. The good to great coach and the health has killed this team in the last few years, unfortunately. But overall, again, this last decade of Falcons football has been the most successful we've ever had in franchise history. You can't ever understate that. It should have been more, should have been better. You see what I'm saying? But it's a matter of, at this point, we've given all the string that we can to Dan Quinn. He was a first-time head coach. He cleaned up what was going on with Mike Smith at the end of that particular era. He got us to the Super Bowl, got us to the playoffs right after that. Then we had the devastating injuries of last year. And again, I say because of coaching, we still could have went 9-7, but we did go 7-9 instead of going 4-12 because we were a 4-12 team last year. You see what I'm saying? We weren't, though. A lot of stuff had to happen for that to happen, but we weren't. Now, going into this year, we were supposed to be fully healthy on defense, fully healthy on offense. See where that's gotten us so far. We were supposed to have fixed the depth issue, too. And apparently we didn't do a good enough job. Now, or
definitely
we just ain't playing everybody. You still got one of those running backs. We're supposed to have like 10 running backs, right? And we still got running backs who haven't even came off the, you know. Two of them actually hadn't even played yet for whatever reason. That's crazy. You got these rookies on the defensive back side. They're not really playing a whole heck of a lot, although that's probably going to change at this point. So is this?
I'll give you another guy real quick. Deidrin Sanat was a third-round draft pick, not in this year's draft, the year before. He has been inactive for every game, but yet you brought other guys in last minute, like an Allen Bailey playing that position. You got a guy, third-round guy, that's not playing. Why wasn't that used to feel like bringing more depth at the edge for Vic Beasley or Pat? I just don't understand it, sir.
Well, I don't know. I think Quinn, like I said, he's run his course. And I think he could still get fired whether or not we win or lose this game Sunday afterwards. Because I don't think we're not mid-season yet. You know what I'm saying? We're one game out of the first quarter. I still say this is the best time to do it now because to languish, to maintain a losing streak in Mercedes-Benz, how is Arthur Blank going to really handle that with his MLS team about to go, you know, try to go to back-to-back, you know, MLS Cups? Meanwhile, again, the Falcons not doing that great. The Falcons are supposed to go to the Super Bowl in Mercedes-Benz. We see how that turned out, right? So I just don't think he can let it go like that. And now I guess if it gets down to it, you clear house, you go all the way with it. But I don't think you could do that immediately. If you're going to get rid of Thomas Dimitroff, you got to do that maybe at the end of this. Well, I don't know. It's not like he's making any personnel moves right now. So I guess you could go ahead and fire Thomas Dimitroff right now and the offensive coordinator and bring in some people. You know what I'm saying? I guess you could do that or interim whatever. And, you know, since the defensive backs coach and the defensive lineman and the defensive linebacker coach is already running the team, they could just, you know, do it by committee, I guess. And I don't know. I guess Mike Mularkey could take over an offensive coordinator and can just do it like that. Cleveland did it last year. They didn't really have a head coach last year. They just kind of traded off, you know, do this, do that, whatever. But at this point, I just don't think we can't lose another game right now. I don't think we can sustain it. And I just don't think Dan Quinn needs to be here anymore. I think because of change, it needs to change. We don't play defense. I've never seen it where we're going to really go through over half a decade and not seeing no press coverage. Like, everybody else plays press coverage, bump and run, something, and we're going to stay 10 yards behind. We're going to stay 10 yards away from you. You could just flip the ball to him and get your 10 yards, and seven plays later, you're in the end zone throwing 10-yard passes. Seem familiar? Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But anyway, 466-524-479, as we've talked a lot of Falcons football tonight. Of course, he kind of had to tonight. You know, Sunday was, I don't think I can ever remember a loss like that before. There's been losses. There's been June Jones losses, you know, man in black losses from back in the day. Say
most
it again?
Points allowed since 2004. So been 15 years since we've given up that many points.
You see what I'm saying? And so that right there, just that screams that you have no control over this team. There is no, you're not holding anybody accountable. It doesn't matter if people don't wrap up. You know, it doesn't matter if you can't touch the quarterback coming off the edge. You can't, you don't have a bull rush. You ain't strong enough to have a bull rush. You can't do, Grady's the only one out there. Make Grady the defensive lineman or something. I don't know. But right now we are wasting time, and I don't think we got that much more time to waste. 646-652-4479. About to close out this Falcons segment. Go ahead, Jordan.
Two more quick points. I give you one example of something you see another team do that we don't do. It's like the fact that our offensive line is struggling, why don't you see more quick plays designed to get the ball into the hands of our best playmakers? Now, if you saw, it was one play on third down where Houston really needed a first down, and they had DeAndre Hopkins take off like he was going to go in motion across the formation. Then all of a sudden, he just turned around and went in motion back the other way, and they flipped him a little quick pass for the first down. You don't see us doing anything like that to get the ball into Julio or Ridley's hands real quick, and that's part of the problem. Other issue, I want to go back to Vic Beasley for my last point. Like we said, zeros across the board. And a while back when he was asked by Jeff Schultz, you know, do you love to play the game of football? And instead of answering the question, Vic Beasley asked Jeff Schultz, well, sir, do you love your job? And Jeff Schultz's response was, yeah, well, most days I do, but some days I don't. You know, I have my days. And Vic Beasley's response was, yeah, that's pretty much the same it is with me and my job. And, sir, that's a problem. Okay, now, when you're a store cashier or, you know, whatnot, you know, yeah, you don't necessarily have to love what you do. But when you are paid millions of dollars and when you're talking about a sport where people are putting their heart and their all into trying to be the best of the best. We know the Jerry Rice work ethic. We know the Michael Jordan and the Kobe Bryant work ethic it takes to be great. We know the Trae Young work ethic. You gotta love what you do, sir, to play in this game and to be great in this game. And so that's a problem for me, sir.
But we're gonna find out. We're gonna find out pretty soon, and hopefully it's sooner than later. I was hoping it was really gonna be Sunday, right after the game was over, before he even walked out the stadium. I was hoping that this author would just, you know, slap him around a little bit and be like,
you know, I think if we didn't have to stay on the West Coast, because you know, the Falcons didn't even come home. They went on out to Arizona to practice and to stay out there. I think if we didn't have that situation happen, I think he may have been fired on Monday. I think it's a
but what does it matter? He has a plane. He can fly out to Arizona. That's not an excuse. That's not an excuse for me. I just don't think it is. All right, so let's try this because we're going to make sure that we get almost all of our segments in tonight. Let's go ahead and get back to Jordan's Jewel. Thanks for all the calls from John, Jonathan, George, Linda so far tonight, and everybody who's been participating on the Facebook Live tonight. Appreciate that. But we're going to go ahead and get into some Jordan's Jewels, and then we're going to talk some Braves. So let's do Jordan's Jewels first. A segment called Jordan's Jewels, talking a lot about different sports out there. Go ahead and take it away, Jordan.
All right. First up, we have a 2019 quarterback comparison. On one hand, we have Mr. Tom Brady, who has a 99.4 passer rating. He's completed 63% of his passes. He's thrown 7.5 yards per attempt for 1,409 yards and has 10 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Matt Ryan, he has not thrown significantly more interceptions with 7, but has one more touchdown than Tom Brady, actually, with 11 touchdowns. He has 1,655 yards, 7.5 yards per attempt, the same as Brady. He's completed 70.3% of his passes, which is over 7% better. Quarterback rating a little bit lower at 95.1 to 99.4. Yet one guy has a team that's 5-0, and the other has a team that's 1-4. This just is a lesson that coaches matter and other personnel matters aside from just the quarterback. That's the lesson in that particular stat. Oh, boy. The Braves' 10 consecutive playoff round losses, which is now tied for the Major League Baseball record, 8 of them have ended in Atlanta, including all 4 NLDS Game 5 losses. Very much a painful stat right there. Freddie Freeman played in his 14th career postseason game. He has 2 career postseason RBIs, both on solo homers. Definitely something we need to see turn around there for one of our best players. Tonight, there was a big controversy tonight because the Atlanta Braves actually pulled the free phone Tomahawks tonight because a Cardinals player who is of Native American descent expressed outrage about the Tomahawk chop gesture. So a lot of the fans are blaming that for what happened, saying that the Braves should not have relented on that. Another thing, and this is really an ominous number right here, it had been exactly 2 years, 8 months, and 3 days since the Falcons lost a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. And it is mighty funny that, you know, that it happened to the Braves on this day, on the 2-8-3 day since that Super Bowl. Hawks have waived Ray Spalding. Let's see. The Braves' poor pitching for Game 5 is tied for the ugliest outing in a playoff game with the 1992, we gave up 13 runs to the Pittsburgh Pirates in a Game 6. So another unfortunate stat there. Cardinals pitcher Jack Flaherty, he became the fifth youngest pitcher to ever win a postseason game at 23 years old, 359 days. As a caller mentioned earlier, Brian McCann has announced his retirement. And so definitely a lot of respect for what he's done throughout his career. He said it was time, and obviously we know he's not the player he was back here before, but still want to congratulate him on a great career. Braves manager Brian Snicker, after the loss, said your goal is to get to the playoffs because anything can happen. I guess we saw that. Anything did happen. I'm sorry, Warren Sharp took a look at the Falcons, and in 2016, the Falcons had the number one offense in the NFL under Kyle Shanahan, but went to the Super Bowl with the 26th ranked defense under Dan Quinn. Kyle Shanahan leaves, Quinn stays. Defense is still bad, ranking 28th in 2017, number 2018, number 31. And right now in 2019, currently ranked number 24. This is from a yardage basis. So clearly Quinn, the defensive guru, has done nothing for the defense. Atlanta Falcons defense also has the third lowest pressure rate without blitzing and is tied for last in the NFL in sacks. And for the sake of wanting to talk some Atlanta Braves, that is Jordan's Jewel segment for this week, sir.
I should have told me that about Brian Snicker. Now he might need to go just because of that statement. Man. Well, that being said, let's go ahead and we're going to finish out the show with some Braves. We weren't able to get to all of our segments, but we definitely got to do this tonight. I just entered into the Atlanta Braves fan group, and for the last time this season, you're going to hear this. All right, so before we do this, I am actually going to do the following because I did have someone ask me specifically about it. I almost forgot. So I do want to keep my word as far as this goes. So we're going to take a minute and a half maybe. UGA is tied for third in the nation, first in the SEC West, blew out Tennessee 43-14. Good old Rocky Top. Woo! All right, they thought they were going to win until the second half. We got South Carolina next. Georgia Tech loses again against USC. They got beat 38-22. They are now 1-4. I don't know what they're doing, but it's not winning. GSU wins against Arkansas State 52-38. Real big win. They're third in the Sun Belt Conference with a 3-2 record. Kennesaw State wins again 31-7 over Street Fighter character Reinhardt. That's a school, by the way. They are now 4-1, but they have not played a conference game yet, so we're going to see if they can keep that up. Jordan, do you happen to have any other colleges that we love to talk about before we talk race?
Shout out to my boys, Albany State University, 21-0 win over Tuskegee. That comes on the heels of a 54-19 win over Clark Atlanta. That is three straight wins for the Golden Rams, so definitely love that. Also had Clark Atlanta up here, which for some reason all of a sudden my computer is not going to load. Clark Atlanta did fall to Miles College, 27-31. Those were a couple I had up right now. I was trying to look at Georgia State and see what they did. I know they beat Arkansas State because I was listening to
52.
Some of that game.
Yes, the score is 52-38. They're 3-2.
Right, and that was a common opponent with UGA because UGA actually played Arkansas State and beat them pretty good. But Arkansas State had won all of their games before facing Georgia State. So a big, big win for Georgia State as well. And I was actually listening to a lot of that game on the radio while they got their big win. So that's what I have in common.
Cool. Appreciate it. So Atlanta Braves fans group, what's going on? How you doing? For the last segment of the night, been a crazy night tonight. Got about, we'll try to go right up until the end for the next 9 minutes. Hopefully we get a caller or two, talk some baseball or participate on the page there. Hopefully you click on the link at the beginning of the top of the page there to listen to the show. That way you can listen to see what's going on. But what do you think is going to happen? I was at work. I wasn't able to watch the game. I was only able to get glimpses and things of that nature. And by the time I saw the first score, I almost had a heart attack. I couldn't believe it. I almost got fired today because of it. You know, because you see, if you're watching the Facebook live right now, this is how I came to work. Got my Atlanta hat on. Got my Atlanta shirt on. Got my blue tie on. I came to work like we were going to win. Little did I know that wasn't in the plans today, and little did I know that somebody just thought he just had to be loyal just one more time. He just had to prove his loyalty. He proved his loyalty by bringing Julio back onto the roster. See how that turned out. And then in a game five, a deciding game, I did a video about this earlier today, so I'm not as heated as I was, but in a deciding game, you decided that was okay to give up 10 runs in the first inning. You thought it was okay, Brian Snitker. And again, I'm not saying he should get fired, although after that statement that Jordan just made and told me what he said, I think he might need to get fired. But he thought it was okay that after the first walk or the second walk or the second run or the third run, it was okay to just let Folger keep pitching. Just let it keep going. Just let it keep happening. And then when Freed comes out there, when he has his first walk or gives up his first, that it was okay to just let him have four. It was okay. Not like we didn't have all pitchers on deck for that particular game. It's an elimination game. Now, far be it from me to observe the offensive side of the ball on this one. Freddie Freeman, we know he ghosted the series. We know this, okay? It is what it is. But he ain't the only player on the team, though. Hank Acuna had a pretty good series. Ozzy had his moments and things of that nature. Josh Donaldson had a couple, you know. But overall, it wasn't what we expected after a whole season of seeing him clutching, me swearing up and down that we had a team that can not only hit for power, but can get man in scoring position and bring him in. and hitting with Werner's in scoring position. It didn't happen again. Last year was one thing, but it wasn't supposed to happen. You got Josh Donaldson, almost an MVP season. You got Freddie, MVP. You got Hank. You got Ozzy. You got Dansby doing his thing, all for naught, because we just had to give up 10 runs. We just had to give up 10. And then the other part of it is, because I saw highlights of it finally, Hank Aquilina gets beat with a gets hit with a pitch, I should say. Nothing happens. Nothing happens.
Even though you're down 13-1.
We're down 13-1. The one time it would have been okay for your whole bench to just come out and just do Warriors, come out and play, and everybody gets suspended. The one time it would have been okay for all the fans with SunTrust to just jump in there, nothing. So we got pumped twice because, again, as Jordan mentioned, well, we're not even going to do the Tomahawk Chop no more because people don't like it. What? We're in Cobb County, I guess. I guess that's what it is because, you know, if that was in downtown Atlanta, I'd be doggone. But I guess since we're in Cobb County and we're televised, don't give out the Tomahawks tonight. You know what I would have did if I was still working there at SunTrust Park like I used to be? I would have got my own stash of Tomahawks, and I would have walked around the Infinity Club and gave some out. We would have started Tomahawk Chop. Bump all that. But no, we got pumped 3-4 different ways. The game before, Yadier Molina, throat slash. We didn't do nothing about that either, did we? There got to be a change. I think it has to be a change, a monumental philosophical change, because you can't keep getting pumped like that and not have no fear of repercussions. You see what I'm saying? And that's what's so messed up about today. It's not just that we lost. Is how you lost and all the elementals before that. And that's what makes it so sad because, again, yes, it's going to be next year, but it's not going to be the same. This was a season of seasons, and all eyes were on Atlanta. We were given that next team up, I should say, and we lost it all in one game. Like, that's a traumatic game. We might not recover from that one. Y'all talk about Super Bowl hangover. That's a game five that, well, first of all, shouldn't have got the game five. We all know this.
Right.
Go ahead, Jordan.
That and the fact that in that game four, we had two different opportunities where the bases were loaded. And one hit in either one of those situations would have blew that game four wide open and sent St. Louis to the house. And then we turn around in the game five and just come and just do not show up to play at all. Just, I mean, no chance to win. Like you said, 10 runs. Before we could even blink good. A lot of people, especially with the time that game was on, a lot of people in Atlanta hadn't even tuned in good yet. I know I hadn't got a chance to tune in at the very beginning of it, and all of a sudden my phone starts lighting up with alerts. Bling, bling, bling. And I'm looking like, what? Huh? It's 7-0, huh? And so, you know, of course I hurried up and tuned in after that, but it's just crazy, sir. And, yeah, one big part about this was the Chris Martin injury. In game one, who he had a strained oblique muscle while warming up the pitch, didn't get the pitch. We end up blowing the lead in game one. He would have came in with a chance to hold the lead in the eighth inning. I think that changes things because if he doesn't get hurt, you also don't have Julio Teheran on the postseason roster. When he came in that game in extra innings to start the 10th inning, and I saw – that Goldschmidt and Ozuna were up for the Cardinals, I knew we were losing. As soon as I saw that Otamon was coming in. I didn't say that, but I knew it.
I got out of work and I saw the box. I saw the score. I saw the run in the bottom of the 10th. I was just like, I already knew, but I had to scroll down. I just had to see. Did they put him in there? Did they dare put him in? There he was. And I was just like, and that just came. All what I've been saying all season is that Julio could not be on this roster because inevitably he's
got to be gone now.
So next year, with all these pitchers that we do have, there's no way in the world to legitimize him taking up a roster spot again. There's no reason for it. And we don't know how the rest of the roster on the hitting side is going to be. As far as Nick Markakis, you know, I think he's going to be gone. We're going to see about Josh Donaldson. We got to see what we're going to do with Austin, you know, Riley. We're going to see how everything else is going, catching wise, What catcher are we going to have?
Gotta
are we really going
to hit catcher?
We got to have a catcher now. We got to get a catcher. So I don't know, but this is our last segment of Braves for the year, y'all. I'm not even going to play. I mean, we might do a little bit.
We're going to have to talk some offseason at some point. The middle of the lineup was a big problem in this series. Hank Acuna, 500, so he did his job. But also Dansby Swanson, 500. Adam Duvall, 429, on only 7 at-bats. And Ozzie Albies, 250 with 3 RBIs. Middle of the lineup, Markakis, 176. McCann, 154. Donaldson, 133. Freeman, 125. And for some reason, Matt Joyce started almost every game except this last one. And he only hit 111, and he only got 200 at-bats during the season. Duvall should have been starting those games. And I also think Austin Riley should have been put on that roster in place of either Ortega or Hector Maria, because at least he does give you a chance to hit a home run in a big situation.
646-652-4479 during the little extension of this Braves segment, as it will be the last one of the night since we had a little bit of the hiccup a little bit earlier. I'm actually sending some over to the Atlanta Braves group. What do we do with Dallas? Do you think, Jordan? I mean, we really didn't get to see. You know, we got free. We got a 5-game series. This messes up so much stuff to an extent.
I hate
as far as
series.
You know,
I really
potential.
Do. You play 162 baseball games. Why is
so
the first round
up.
Only 5 games? It needs to go to 7 like the NBA did. You remember years ago, the NBA first round was 5 games, and they just made every series 7, because to me, a 7-game series is a much truer test of your baseball team. Yeah, and honestly, I understand why they made Freed a reliever after Martin got hurt, but honestly, I would have liked to have seen him start game. I would have liked to have seen him start game 4 rather than bringing all these guys on short rest. That just did not work out for us. We had a pretty good 4. Why not go ahead and use all 4 as starters? I don't know. As far as Keuchel, I'd like to see us bring him back if the money's right. He's a Braves fan. He's a solid guy, a veteran. But I also want to see us, like, add a 5th guy to those 4, someone who's better, like, a true number 1 type guy. Donaldson, he can come back if it's reasonable enough. He can come back, but Markakis needs.
Well, he played himself into even a larger contract that we probably would have gotten at this point. I wouldn't mind Josh being there if it gets down to it. He can play the position. He can hit consistently. I mean, he hit better than Camargo at the end of the day, right? But what do you do with Austin Riley, though? That's the thing. I mean, you ain't gonna put Donaldson out there in the outfield at all. So that.
Well,
I
think you still stick Austin Riley out of the outfield. Depending on who wins your outfielder spot, I think your outfield is very much up in the air. You can maybe have him compete with Adam Duvall for some at bats, and then we got Pache as well as Drew Walters, who will be pushing to make the big league club next year. But for me right now, Hank Acuna should be the only thing set in the outfield. The other thing I want to say is I understand that this guy hits a bunch of leadoff home runs and all that stuff, but this should be the last year we've seen of this Acuna batting leadoff, man. This guy is too good of a hitter. He needs to be in the middle of the lineup driving guys in. Getting one extra at-bat some games, to me, is not worth the amount of RBIs that we're leaving
on the
table by having.
Especially with Freddie ghosting like he did. That definitely hurt because, you know, again, you still got to have people ahead of him, though, but – you know, it's catch 22 at this point. You know,
well,
but
at this point though, Albies and Swanson, I like them 1 and 2. Then I like Freddie or Acuna, you know, 3 and 4.
That's how they started. That's how they had started out. But,
right.
But the answer just couldn't hit with crap at the time. So.
Right. Right. Well, actually, he did much better this year than last year though. But it was Albies that actually struggled a little bit early, but he came on too. I think they jumped the gun by scrapping that lineup. Because, okay, I understand, you know, that's one of the things that Hank was, that Hank was kind of comfortable hitting the leadoff. But at this point, he's going to have to get over that and just realize he's more valuable in the middle of our lineup. Now, got to have protection for him, but if you put him behind Freddie shouldn't see more pitches, you know, especially in a postseason scenario. Because in the playoffs, you're going against the best of the best, man. And so Hank has shown you he can hit. It don't matter who it is. He's gonna get his. But I think if you put him behind Freddie, then they'll have to pitch a Freddie more as well.
Yeah.
And maybe have a Donaldson coming behind Hank.
Well, it's going to be interesting this offseason. Again, there's a lot of issues. I'm not sure who Gil is talking about here. As far as tell to get out and don't come back.
Maybe Julio.
Hopefully it's Julio. But we're going to see. I mean, they did what was supposed to be needed to fix the bullpen. They did it. It didn't work at first, but it ended up working. That was a positive, but, again, how it ended up ending wasn't. And, again, I look at the mismanagement of the bullpen. It's probably more of a killer than the lack of the offense. Because it's still a matter of your job is to keep your team in it. Your job is to make the moves as best as possible to work. And a lot of his are haphazard at best sometimes and still based off of loyalty. There's no loyalty in baseball where you're trying to win. Again, how do you look your guys in the eyes in the locker room knowing you gave up 10 runs? It wasn't free. It wasn't faulty. They were allowed to stay out there. You see what I'm saying? Because he's the manager. As a pitcher, you just go, oh, I'm tired of pitching. I'm going to just take myself out. There is protocol. You see what I'm saying? I don't have it tonight. This is game five. This would have been different if he had gave up six runs in seven innings. That's something because you don't have nobody else who can go out there. You got to pitch them. You know what I'm saying? We've seen those situations before, right? Especially in the bullpen, long relief, right? This was game five, inning one, and he pitched a third. Three walks, six runs. Come on. Like, for me, it's just the principle of it all. It should have never gotten beyond that second walk. Pull him. Like, for real. Like, this is the playoffs. You don't know what's going to happen, but you do know if you give up walks, you're probably going to lose. And what happened? And it's, to me, that's just disturbing to me. I just don't see how it could have gotten to that point. And, again, I missed the game. But it's just – it's sad, really. It's sad because all those people in SunTrust Park, all Braves fans everywhere, this is a bad taste in the mouth. We got pumped. We all got pumped. You know what I'm saying? And we almost, for next year, it's like, first of all, we have to hope that St. Louis don't win the World Series. We'll never live it down.
Oh,
ever.
Man.
Never live it down. We'll never live this one down. But next year during the regular season, we have to sweep St. Louis. Like, we can't lose against St. Louis. In St. Louis or at home, we can't lose against St. Louis now because of this. Or we at worst, we have to blow them out by 25. We have to score 25 runs to make this run.
Or fight them, or at least
go to jail. Cobb County is notorious for putting people in jail. Can we at least get some people in jail for a night? You see what I'm saying? Something has to happen, though. You know what I'm saying? It has to go down. So I'm trying to think of a Maybe Marcus Giles. Maybe we could throw Marcus Giles out there in Braves uniform and let him go. And, you know, he ain't part of the team, but he loves to fight, though. It's frustrating, y'all. We're going to get ready to close this show out tonight. But, Jordan, you have any final thoughts?
Well, I have a question for you, sir.
Go ahead.
I know a lot of people are going to think that this is crazy, but would you consider making a change at the manager position, especially then the name in particular I'm thinking of is a guy who, yeah, they didn't win this year, but Joe Maddon has done more with less everywhere he's been, and he took the Cubs to a World Series victory, and they hadn't won in over 100 years.
100 years, he broke the curse.
If he wants to come here, do you make the change, sir?
Yeah, you make that move. You make that move. Yeah, you got to.
Okay.
You so again, up until later this evening, I wasn't thinking about firing Snicker until that comment you said that he made. Because then I'm like, okay, well, that says a lot to me right there. But again, for me, it's just a matter of the mismanagement part of things. He's the manager. At a certain point, you're the game manager, and you just got to start making better decisions per your roster. And he kept putting AJ Minter back. He was gone. And he brought him back just to give up some more runs. You see what I'm saying? Julio was off the roster. You bring him back. We didn't have no other pitchers. We have nobody else. But you brought him in to give up that run that we didn't need to give up. You know what I'm saying? And then today, 10 runs. There's no way you can legitimize how you get let 10 runs. He let 10 runs get. So y'all have to understand how desperate this is. He allowed that to happen. He allowed it to happen. So for me, you're talking about a manager with actual experience. Actually, World Series, I mean, at a certain point, it's all cool and everything that, you know, Snicker, you know, he's been in the organization for 4-plus years. You know what? He can stay in the organization for all I care. He's just maybe not as a manager anymore, as opposed to somebody who's really done it and he's won a lot more, like, and what Jordan says, with less. Imagine with this roster, can you imagine over the last 5 years that he had been here? Can you imagine what we've – I'm telling y'all. So I say if it happens, I won't be mad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that even though Snicker's done well, don't get me wrong, but I think that there comes a time when you have to take risk and say, okay, if there's a guy right here, I feel like he can get us to the next level. So let's go ahead and do something that a lot of people won't expect, but if it works, we can win a World Series. Sometimes you got to take those risks. So I would definitely bring in a guy like Joe Maddon. I think Joe Maddon would do a better job relating to some of our younger players like Hank Acuna, Ozzie Albies, Dansby Swanson, whereas I think Snicker relates more to the older veterans like a Donaldson or to a Freddie Freeman. And, you know, ultimately it's just been some decisions that have been questionable. Now, he did make the right move to pinch hit for Fulte in game two, and Adam Duvall came through with a big-time home run. But at the same time, I just question even starting Matt Joyce for 4 games. Matt Joyce was not a starter for us most of the season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why would you start him for 4 games as opposed to Austin Riley, who was available, putting him on the roster and giving him some of those starts or giving Duvall those starts? Okay, Adam Duvall, you know, he was one of our better players, but he only had 7 at-bats in the series, hitting .429 with 5 RBIs. What would have happened if he got the you know, 9 at-bats that Matt Joyce got? Well, you know, what if you add those to the 7 Duvall had? What could Duvall have possibly done then? You know what I mean? So I question that choice right there as well. You know, and like I said, you know, you could have used Duvall and maybe used Riley as your power pinch hitter, because these guys, Hunter Maria, Rob, and Ortega, they just weren't going to give us anything. And when they came in and pinch hit, it was almost like another out. So, yeah, man. I like old Snit. I respect what he's done in the organization, but if you can get a guy like a Joe Maddon, a guy that's won World Series rings, I think you do make that move, and I think, you know, it could take us to the next level. I'm just hurt and disappointed, though, Chris, man, because I didn't expect this to end in the first round, man. I wanted to see the Dodgers again. And here we go. Last I checked, the Dodgers were up on that game against the Nationals, because their series had gone 4 games as well. It looks like they're going to be moving on, and they're going to still, well, maybe I'm speaking too soon. The Nationals have tied that game at 3 in the bottom of the ninth. The Dodgers have 1 on with 2 outs, so maybe the Nationals, which that's going to be even more painful if someone in our division moves on.
We talked that junk and smack, all of a sudden, the Nats are actually in there. And then, we won't win the World Series either. Philly's didn't make it. That's sorry, Joker, Bryce Harper and all. But if all of a sudden, after everything, we won the division, but the Nats are in the NLCS, maybe we need to get rid of Brian Snicker. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. It's really bittersweet. You know, we had a great season. We did win the division again. But now it's like, excuse me, are we going to be like the Braves of old? Just win divisions and that's about it? I mean, you know, it's kind of starting to look like that a little bit, but I still feel we have a better team. And St. Louis, I'm gonna just use them as a fluke experiment type of a deal, because they really don't got no real team, and they know it. They just got hot, and they ended up winning. They beat us. They just beat us fair and square. But again, I think mismanagement caused that more so than anything. Again, we should never have got to a game 5 at all. We didn't hit with runners in scoring positions. And of all the pitchers to put in a tie game, of all the pitchers, let me stop. But anyway, we got to close out the show, y'all. We want to thank everybody in all the different Facebook groups, Atlanta Braves fans group. We just exited there. New Pack City, shout out to Betsy and others. George, who called in. John, who called in. Who else called in tonight? Jonathan called in from New Jersey. Had a lot of callers tonight, so appreciate everybody calling in, participating in the groups. Atlanta Bird Gang, of course, participating. Every week we come on the air. We schedule the show 10 to midnight. We went a little bit over tonight because we had some technical difficulties, so we gave y'all a little bit extra. Extra there. But we appreciate everybody who continues. Oh, and Linda. Don't forget Linda. Linda called in from the game on State Farm Arena. I knew it was somebody. I had to think about it before we got off the air. So if you haven't done it yet, follow the page, the radio station page, IMTM Worldwide Radio on Facebook and also on Instagram, IMTM Worldwide Radio. Make sure you do that. You can listen to the show on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Spreaker, Radio.com. All you got to do is type in Around the ATL. Follow one of those pages. Maybe you are already a subscriber of one of those. If you're not subscribed to one, iHeartRadio, Spreaker page, one of those. And of course, follow again on social media. So that way you always know when the show is. And of course, every Wednesday, call into the show like some of y'all did today or participate at least on the Facebook page. Appreciate that. I will be doing a new shoot schedule for my movie Transitions. I'm getting closer and closer to finishing the film. I was just in Atlanta just the other day for a really cool fashion show rehearsal that I put on. It went great. There's lots of other things coming up. So make sure you follow me on Instagram, IMTM Worldwide, and follow that particular page to keep up with me. Jordan, tell people how they can find you on social media, your new writings on Bulldog Maven via Sports Illustrated, which is still a huge deal. Congratulations to you. And how they can reach out to you as well.
Yes, I can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Jordan23ATL. Find the writings on ATLallday.com. There's also a Facebook page to like for it. Sports Illustrated Bulldog Maven. Search that on Google. You'll find the website there. It is a Sports Illustrated Georgia Bulldogs site. We also have a Facebook page and a Twitter page as well. And just thank you guys out there for reading my writings. Thank everyone who listens to our show. Thank you to all the callers tonight. Definitely some great, great discussions tonight. And last but not least, I want to thank God for giving me this breath that I breathe to talk about these Atlanta, these Georgia sports that I love, even though they frustrate me sometimes.
That's an understatement. So, guys, please continue to share the show. We appreciate all of y'all's participation again, but definitely support-wise, Facebook, Instagram, let people know about it. We've been doing big things. We're going to do bigger things going into 2020, so we appreciate y'all, but definitely make sure y'all keep sharing those pages. Share Around the ATL. If you listen to the show, you listen to this show and watch this show, you enjoy it, tell other people. That's the biggest way to keep us going.
Tell 77 people.
77 people. That way, they can all join the show next week. We can have a 5-hour show. No, we can't have a 5-hour show next week with 77 people calling in. Anyway, that being said, we're gonna get out of here. Y'all take care. This is Chris on IMTM Worldwide Radio on Around the ATL. Y'all take care. Peace. Go Braves.
Go on. Thank you.